Hey, everybody, this is Justin Case, episode 64 of Case in Point. I have my friend, my good friend and host, Kyle Davis, with me. Ponch is on assignment, and he is parts unknown, somewhere very hot and humid, probably stuck with nothing but pineapple soda, and who knows what else he could find at the store. But anyway, that's really not dropping any clues. Anyway, he is having a good time on a little vacation, so we're going to go forward with him without him tonight, and we're going to jump into some toy news, some grumbling by me on that front, and Kyle's got some things he wants to share. I've got some big updates on the kit build I want to cover, and that's kind of going to set the tone for this evening's episode. Before we get too far out of whack here, I'm going to mention some of our fellow podcasts that we like to mention on a regular basis, and one of them is the Fireside Chat podcast with Ryan McCormick, and we also have the what Brand is totally shot. We started these things too late. We have the McSauce podcast with Ian, Paul, and Matt. Check both those podcasts out. They're great, longtime friends of the show. They're all great, but for their own reasons. Excellent content. And also, Hope This Finds You Well, another fantastic show. They've been up in their game and getting some good stuff out there. And also, I haven't really been in contact with this gentleman in a long time, Chadwick Suet. He's got a podcast, and it's totally slipping my mind. I'm doing terrible tonight. At least I didn't call you Carl that time, Kyle. Yeah, expect a lot of sound effects. We got the Soundmaster, and so yeah. Oh, Chadwick Suet and the Element of Surprise podcast. So there's our kind of our house cleaning segment. Very short. And I noticed that Kyle is wearing a Nintendo 64 T-shirt, which you can't see, which is going to segue into his video game news. He's got some N64 stuff he's excited to tell us all about, and then we'll segue over to some of the stuff I've got in the pipes. And take it away, Kyle.
Well, good news in the video gaming world. Well, at least it's probably old news, but I lately, you know, I've been streaming. Because I do stream games, tend to be a lot of retro consoles and stuff. So one of the coolest things I found, because I was repairing an NES, Nintendo Entertainment System, and so I went in to go get some parts for it to get it back up and going, and then I find this wonderful beast here. This is a Super HD2 Gamers Tech. This is a NES and a Super built into one system. It is actually quite a, I don't know if I've showed you this yet, Justin, but so basically I can play all my Zelda and my Super Nintendo games all on one console instead of having to do it separate.
Oh, wow. That's nice. So what Kyle's showing us is the fact that you can have an SNES cartridge in front and an NES cartridge in the back. And the funny thing is that the console itself looks a lot like maybe the Famicom or the Super Nintendo for us in the States.
Yeah, and
very impressive.
And then you also have the connections, which I have the
controller. Yeah, those are the NES controller connections, yeah.
And you have the Super controller connections in the front. So you can use either or, which is really nice. The biggest thing what I've been doing is because me and Justin talked, I don't know, a few weeks ago, we were talking about gaming cartridges remanufactured by fans. He got one. Some guy made him a game. I think he put a few games on the one cartridge, didn't he?
Well, I have the Mega Man one, the homebrew, which they would take and not only some homebrew games. It's like a light blue SNES cartridge, and it has I think it even has Mega Man Soccer on there. But they're all done in the graphics of the 8-bit graphics of the NES. So you could have a game like Mega Man Soccer, which is really a game that was originally for the SNES, at least for us in the States, but then they port to an NES, downgrading the graphics so that it looks like an NES game. And, you can go on Etsy and stuff, and they've got stuff on there where they're putting games on, SD cards and stuff.
Well, so the cool thing, what I've been doing lately, so I've been on that kick. So here's the game that I've always played on the N64. It was my absolute favorite game It was Zelda: The Ocarina of Time, my favorite N64 game by all means. Well, I happen to also watch, I stream on Twitch, and I happen to watch other Zelda streamers, and I noticed them playing another game that was similar to Ocarina of Time, and I'm like, is this a Zelda game I missed out on the N64? I only thought they built two games. Turns out, well, there happens to be five of them for the N64.
This is Majora's Mask.
Majora's Mask. So Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask were both produced by Nintendo. The other game, like The Legend of Zelda The Missing Link, which is this one right here, is a fan-made game.
The Missing
Link. Yeah, Missing Link.
Does Link have overbite?
Yeah. So this is a fan-made game. So a guy who really liked Zelda decided to make this game. Basically, this one takes place between Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask. It's in the in-between time. So a guy decided to design and make an N64 game that discusses what happens in between. And so I was like, man, that's really cool. Well, in my discovery, the very first first-person shooter game I ever played was James Bond 007 on Nintendo 64, which is also, you know, I know, Justin, you're not a big fan of first-person shooters. So they have this one, 007. Now, this version you might not like, Justin, but I found a version you very well may like or at least tolerate. It is GoldenEye made by a fan using Mario character. They replaced characters.
I can handle that, yeah.
Yeah, they replaced all the characters with Mario characters.
You get an idea. What about a version of GoldenEye with Timothy Dalton instead of Pierce Brosnan? But we'll have Timothy Dalton be the, he was the German spy on the Rocketeer. What was the guy's Neville Sinclair? I think it was Neville Sinclair. So you can, that's awesome.
The stuff these guys come up with is absolutely amazing. I will say one of the games did bite me in the butt, which was the Pokemon game. You know, I found out in the news through my streaming friends that they made a really cool Pokemon Yellow game, which is the original Yellow Game Boy Color game for NES. I mean, Game Boy is just a mini NES anyway, so they made one for that. But the case is supposed to be yellow, so when I got this one, I realized it was wrong because it was in a gray case, right? The sticker was right, and the game was Looney Tunes, like Super Mario, so you got to get the coins and stuff and jump across.
Yeah, yeah.
But with a Pikachu character that looked like Pikachu on drugs. I was baffled, and I was like, you know, I'm really angry I didn't get the game I want, but this game looks hilarious at the same time. So
I have a part of that, yeah.
And
there's some weird stuff floating around, man. Especially if you get the Raspberry Pi compilations that they have out there, it'll have like pretty much like all systems, even like TurboGrafx and the TurboGrafx and the PC Engine. Right. Mm-hmm. So there's the PC Engine, and then they'll have some Japanese only games on there, which you can't read any of the characters, or like characters being the letters, right? But yeah, you'll find some weird stuff with like Animaniacs,
The game was absolutely like it was horrendous. It was like the guy I messaged the guy and I say, hey man, you sent me the wrong game. And he's like, are you sure? He goes, I sent him pictures, and he's like, that looks like that's the game. I'm like, no. I go, since when does Looney Tunes and Pokemon even mix? I sent you a picture, Justin, of what the character looks like. It is quite entertaining to see this. It's Pikachu jumping on a mouse. And it looks like somebody, it looks like almost like a Pikachu became Winnie the Pooh on there. And, the guy was like, oh, well, I didn't know that. And I'm like,
oh yeah, I've seen this.
Yeah. I was like, do you even look at the games before you send them out? I was a little disappointed on that, but I will say this, out of the other custom games I found, of the homebrews, they were home runs. I was a little scared at first, but the homebrew stuff has actually been coming out pretty solid. Except for the Pikachu.
Yeah, Pikachu's looking pretty rough. It looks like some kind of deranged nightmare. It's huge. It's a Pikachu that's like the size of a person with a gut. It's not even like a normal Pikachu size, which would be like a cuddly like koala bear size, you know? Yeah, that's kind of scary. Imagine seeing something like that outside your window at night. Good luck sleeping at night, folks. You're just thinking about a giant Pikachu with red eyes and fangs. It can still shock you. You
know? Have a shocking experience?
Well, it's like... It, ah man, they're they there's some weird stuff that people do with Pikachu out there, I'm sure. But the weirdest thing I ever saw myself was my brother-in-law sent me this picture of someone had spray-painted their cat up to look at the Pikachu. And they spray painted the cat like yellow, and I'm sure there's probably some. I don't think they use Krylon. I'm think they probably just used some food coloring, or something, or maybe used some fancy CG or something, but just overlaid it on the cat. But it was still, because I love cats, but I'm sure they probably just colored it Photoshop. Still looked pretty cool, but yeah, it's kind of funny. But I like Pokemon. I my first experience with Pokemon is I had the blue and the red versions for Game Boy. And then what I did is I put them through the Game Boy Color, which was for the Super Game Boy Color or whatever, and that was for the SNES, obviously. And so that was cool, and that's how I essentially played those. I didn't even use a portable system. I used the Super Game Boy for the SNES. It was awesome, and I never got to play the yellow because my mom got me those two for Christmas, and. They're like RPGs, they're turn-based, for those of you who are not familiar with the old system. But at that time, I'm talking late 90s, like 97, 98, you could not, the Pikachu edition Game Boy cartridge, it was sold out, you could not get it, especially around Christmas time, and during the original run of the game. You could get blue, red, and green. Green was like the Bulbasaur edition, blue was Squirtle, and red was the Charmander. And that's what was out at the time. And then they started coming out silver, and then, you know, just different. There's so many different versions of that now. But even the Game Boy, what do you call it? The DS. Those are great. Like Platinum and Pearl and all those.
Yeah, Diamond. Those came out on, because it was Game Boy, Game Boy Color, then it was Game Boy Advanced. Advanced SP, and then I think it was like
the DS,
which is after the Game Boy Advanced SP. I don't think I owned another Game Boy after that one. I really loved playing it, but it was just Xbox. You know, the better PlayStation came out. Xbox came out with something revolutionary, and the handheld gaming. You know, PlayStation came out with, I think it was the PlayStation Vita, which was really cool. Which is where I kind of think Nintendo got their idea from to make like the Wii U and the Nintendo Switch. I think it came from like playing the handheld, because the Vita was really cool. It was literally you playing the PlayStation game but on a portable. And then PlayStation kind of like just dumped the whole concept.
There's a ton of Vita games over Japan. There's a bunch of Japanese games. Like it was. Once again, it's a classic story of a video game system of some sort being more popular in Japan than it is in the States. And they just have, over in the Japanese market, they just have a greater appreciation for any system that's out. They just love it. And I tend to be the same way as long as it's the controller and everything is to my liking. And the game select is the biggest thing.
Do you remember the Mario game that they released as a different Mario game here in the U.S. because they thought it was going to be too hard for Americans to play?
Never heard that story, but I know that the Mario 2 that we have was a replacement for the Mario Brothers 2 that Japan got. And that one, that Mario Brothers, the Japanese version, is actually more difficult. It's like a hard version. Alternate reality of Mario Brothers, the first Mario Brothers game we got in the States.
I believe it was Mario Brothers 2 is the actual game, because they masked it over another game. They literally took another game and they
there's like a kid and they reskinned it over that game. To make it the U.S. version.
Yeah, and they said it was because they didn't think the Americans could handle the difficulty of what the Japanese people could.
I think that sounds kind of inaccurate, because the story I'd always been told was that the ship that had the cartridges of Super Mario 2 sunk on its way to the U.S.
That's also a story I've heard, too. I've heard, like, both versions of it. Mario 2 story. So gotta go. Let's go to Punch on this. Just kidding.
Yeah,
it's secret reporting.
It's kind of hard.
It's like
11:55 his time. Of course, that he never sleeps. I think if he does sleep, he sleeps upside down for about 30 minutes, and he's good for the next day. So you know he's that guy. That guy just keeps. He's just an energy bunny. But yeah, no, he'll be back for the next. Yeah, that was. There's a lot of different things out there. You can watch any number of YouTube videos where they have a regimented history of the TurboGrafx, history of the NES, and they always cadence their words the same. And this is a history TurboGrafx 16. Like, and they're always like, it's like, come on, guys. Really? Do you like the sound of your own voice? You need to all try and whatever. Anyway.
So the Western release of Super Mario Brothers 2 was based on Yumi Kojo Doki Doki Panic, family computer disk system game meant to tie in with the Fuji Television Series Media Technology Group. The Japanese version of Super Mario Bros., later released initially as Super Mario Bros. The Lost Levels, is too difficult and similar to its predecessor, Yumi Kojo Doki Doki Panic, was modified because Super Mario Bros. 2 release outside of Japan was a commercial success, but was considered too difficult for Westerners.
Thanks a lot, and how do they know? How do they know it's too difficult if we never got to play it?
I will say this. They're making
an unfair assumption.
So when the game was remade, there was a ship that did sink with the copies on it. So both stories seem to be true.
I can say something real funny, but I won't.
Yeah, so the original supply of the game was on a ship in transit to the U.S. and did sink. And then it looks like they had to switch the game cartridges in a panic mode to get them back over here to the U.S. is what it looked like. But yeah, Super Mario on the original, he's holding like a turnip in his hand, which is, I think, just a straight up mask over the other game. And then they eventually re-released the game with the original, which is, like I said, they re-released the game as the Mario Super Bros. The Lost Levels.
I texted you something back. Yeah, well, who won WW2? Let's answer that. Who's smart now? I don't know if maybe I'll edit that out. I'm not sure. No, I'm not going to. It's world history. Yeah, and I figured you'd like that.
I do like history jokes. It's like it's always funny. Everybody's like, well, look who won this and that and that. Well, I'd say they did pretty good for themselves, even for losing. You know,
it's pretty much one of the mainstays of industry these days. If you guys go back and listen to episode 61, Tower of Power, or maybe 62, I'd have to go check, but it was all about computer towers and the shortage of computer chips, which is typically not the format of this show, but we were just totally going random on that one. But I'm a little giggly tonight. That's okay.
That's what sleep deprivation will do to you.
Absolutely. Oh, I'm fucking exhausted. Are you kidding me? Oh.
And how was your success with Kit?
Oh, brother. Yeah. So right now the front entryway of my mansion is full of boxes. The halls of case. Kyle's been to my house once. It's a nice place, but I bought all new polyurethane bushings for the whole car. Those are the ones you have to oil like once a year, otherwise it'll creak, but they won't deteriorate over time. All new front end, sway arm end links, all new Moog front end suspension, rotors all the way around the car, new calipers. Weather stripping. I got the electric fans with the adjustable thermostat. That'll be really nice. And pretty much went all out buying parts last weekend, and it's making a lot of progress. In fact, tonight I was actually hitting the engine bay with some rust reformer, so to preventative rust. It really had no rust in there, so which is great, because when I dropped the cross member and stuff to go get everything sandblasted and repainted for the front end, I noticed there was no rust under that where that thing was bolted up. I was amazed. So I went ahead and did some sanding on that to get it all smoothed out, so when we go paint the engine bay next week, it's going to be nice and smooth, you know, won't be any texture there, which would be great. So that's what we'll be doing next weekend. And then once that's done, I'm going to let it cure for a couple of months. And while that's getting done, I'm going to be rebuilding the front and rear end of the car. And then after that's done, I'm going to go and finish painting the doors, the front nose, and the fenders. And so once that's done, I will be putting in Kit's scanner, and I will be putting the car back together, and it's going to look like Kit. So it's going to be awesome. So everything's going to be getting painted and reassembled. The car will be probably 80% done by the time fall rolls around. So
that'll be exciting to see. And are you still posting pictures of the car on Twitter?
I think I did recently, or maybe I did Instagram, but yeah, I will get some pictures up there where you guys can see the progress. That's the plan. And so, yeah, that's going to be great because everything has to be done in a sequence, right? You have to get all the front end and stuff put back in, get the engine bay painted, get all the front end and everything back in, put the engine in because you have new motor mounts, right? And so all of that is done in sequence, right? So, but I did buy carpet, so carpet will be here on Monday, and I can actually start laying that back in once I get the engine bay painted. So really, it's everything's coming together. I'm really excited, and the floor has like two layers of hush mat. So when this car is going down the road, plus I bought Eibach Sportline lowering springs. It's going to lower the car an inch and a half, just like on a TV show. It's going to be great, and it's going to handle awesome. The body roll is going to be gone. I'm keeping the same shocks and struts, because if you get springs, if you're not going to lower any more than about an inch and a half to 2 inches, you don't need to buy new shocks and struts. So that'll be nice, and that's kind of where we're at, and I bought weather stripping, so all the T-tops, all brand new rubber, and it's going to be great. So the only thing at that point that's slowing me up is my own forgetfulness of where I put half the stuff. Why do I have an extra bolt here? What is this for?
That's just standard of working on cars.
Yeah, and it bothers me, but I want to make sure I'm going to go section at a time so that I can make sure everything is torqued to factory spec and everything is accounted for.
I did the same thing when I pulled apart the engine of the two Firebirds, the one that got cannibalized for Justin's car, and
yep.
The other one that unfortunately the mice was mightier than the Trans Am.
Nice.
When doing that, when I pulled it apart, because I was learning engines at the time, I always had a sequence I had to do it in, and like I had to make sure I put the bolts all in like order of how I removed them. That way I could put them all back. But somehow one magically appears left
always,
over.
Always. It's like a gremlin. And just to let you know, Kyle, if you ever wanted a piece of your 82 Firebird SE back, I still have the original dash cluster.
put that on my shelf behind me so I can have good memories.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm using the one on your 84.
Yeah, the 84 was, that thing was so nice. And I thought I had, you know, for a long time, I'd always thought I had messed it up, you know, where I put that engine in there. I did the transmit, everything was set up. And then it just died on me one day when I got on the highway. And then come to find out, as soon as I decide to cannibalize the car and rebuild another car with the parts, I find that, well, mice had gotten into it and eaten the wiring harness and killed the car. You know, 1980s cars, really, they only had like four computers in the car, but they had one that was the safety and it just killed the car. So I even had switched the points system to, or I had switched it from HDI to points, and that almost worked. There was still
going backwards in time, man, going from an HDI strip to point to point.
I was absolutely determined to keep this Firebird running, but the mice just kept destroying every part that I had to. You know, because you've seen where I worked on the cars. It was out in the middle of the boonies.
Yeah, it looked like the frickin' moon of Endor up there where you're working on those cars.
Well, yeah, the little Ewoks helped out moving the car parts around. You know, when you have 20 little frames out there. I
had the 14-inch rims still as well. So, and the hubcaps he sold.
those are, you know, I wish I had a machine shop. I could get those redone. Those are like some of the nicest wheels in the world. I was able to recover wheels on a Camaro I had sold, the gold wheels, managed to get those back. I sold them I was in need of cash one time, and I sold the wheels. If you remember, there was a Camaro up on blocks.
Yeah.
And so those wheels were sold off to a lady in Idaho in Post Falls. Well, her Camaro backfired on the carburetor and flames came through the vents. Oof. Her car caught fire and melted. So I saw that in the newspaper. I called the lady, gave her my condolences for the car. And then I asked her, can I buy those wheels back?
Nice.
I had to peel the rubber. It took a while to get the burnt rubber off the wheels.
Yeah.
But I did get it. It did happen. There was something, you know, because And I still, you know, I still collect every time I see a kit model. I always think of you on that. But, you know, there was I know I had my video game news. I know you got some toy news. I know I helped Ponch get into some new G.I. Joe classified series. I sent him a Gung Ho the other day. He just got that.
Yeah, I think he's one of the harder ones to find. You're talking about the 6-inch, right?
Yeah, and then
yeah, I found a Roadblock. I found Roadblock, or they had a Cobra Commander, two of them at the Walmart here, at one of the WalMarts, and then at Target had a Roadblock.
So yeah, and Lady J comes out. I think she came out today for GameStop, so she just can't got released. But I think, you know, I was interested to hear, because I know you were a little upset earlier about your toy news when I brought it up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so thanks to my brilliant wife, she was actually able to get me the 2021 PowerCon set, their alternate paint set of the Masters of the Origin series. And the plan was to get the Leo, they call it the Leo Faker, and then, what was the name? They had a name for the cat, but it's a two-pack, right? And so they call it Leo Faker, and it was a Faker that came out in India, and I have to go back and look and see what's called Leo Faker. It looks like Faker, but he's got, like, black. It looks like he's got something like the Green Arrow's little mask that just goes around his eyes, you know? He looks like that, or, like, maybe Hal Jordan Green Lantern from the 80s, 70s and 80s. And
he's got a black suit of armor thing?
No, there's no armor. He just has your standard crossbones armor like Skeletor would have, but it's orange. But then,
I see. I got it up on Google.
Oh, okay. Yeah, they took the Cringer cat and painted it an alternate color, like a light, like the same light blue with the white stripes and stuff and some blood on it, like it's battle damage. And then they put like these cybernetic or armored paws on the front. So it looks a little weird, but that sold out. And then there was an accessory pack for the Castle Grayskull, Motu Origins Castle Grayskull coming out, where the suit of armor is actually a real figure. And then the dungeon piece, which has, it's sculpted. So those are things for the Castle Grayskull that's coming out from, I think originally it was Walmart was going to have those in stock. So it's supposed to be things that complete your Castle Grayskull. And so those sold out on PowerCon. I was really bent out of shape. And I've never, ever, ever, I've been buying exclusives from PowerCon as a non-attendee for going on 4 years. I've never missed out on anything. And they sent me an email saying, we apologize for selling out. We did not anticipate the demand for these. I'm thinking, you guys are like super fans of PowerCon. You guys are running PowerCon. Aren't you guys supposed to know what's going to be super hot and what isn't as far as Masters? You know, and usually when they put orders in from the Chinese factory, they'll have Mattel do it. They'll be a year in advance for SKUs, right? Well, if it's a pre-order, just say how many orders that you filled and go fill them, right?
You know, that's something interesting I've noticed recently, because, like, you know, when I would always action figure hunt, never have I ever really run into, I can't find it because they're out of stock or they're out of supply.
Well, this shut the website down because my wife was trying to get in there, and like, oh yeah, our site crashed because of traffic.
Well, and it just seems like all of a sudden more people are interested in hunting down action figures.
Yes, it's called Ferengi traders, scalpers.
Yeah,
they have this delusion they can get rich and be able to retire off scalping toys right as they come out on the market.
Well, same thing with the PlayStation, the Xbox. They're all throwing these bots out there because they know that there's collectors and they'll pay extra money just to have it. And it's even, you know, and I'm, you know, I'm hoping.
I will not pay extra money. They can go lick a toilet seat because, you know what? I will have the Knight Industries 2000 in my garage and they can have their little action figures. And I built it myself. Thank you.
And if I remember right, that's also the last authentic kit for a kit car, if I remember right, the one that you're using for your vehicle.
Well, the fiberglass parts?
Correct.
Yeah, I mean, I got them from Rob Luizel Enterprises, and he's a great guy. And, I got to know him pretty well over the last few years because I'm on the, you know, Knight Rider Facebook forum. Or not forums, but this night, it used to be the foundation forums Then they moved to Facebook. I'm in that group, and I've met some great builders in there, legitimate builders. Like, there's one guy I'm pretty good friends with. He's out of Kansas City, and he actually builds those cars, and he sold his last one at the Barrett-Jackson auction. So this guy's high-end. He's building a super suit mode version of Kit, which is a season version of Kit where the panels, the spoilers come out and it's supposed to go super fast on the show. He's using pneumatics right now or vacuum lines to he fabricated all the fins and stuff to come out from scratch. And he's just amazing. He's like the Tony Stark of Knight Rider builders. And, you know, the thing about this, building one of these cars is that you really have to... You if you don't know what you're doing, you got to take the time. If you want to do something quality, take the time and think about what you're doing. Because when I was building that dash, I had people on my YouTube channel telling me, where can I get this thing? Or, where can I get this set? I go, you can't get it. You have to go find someone to make you the fiberglass part. You buy the electronics, and you have to wire it up yourself and position all those plates and everything yourself. You can't buy this dash that I have to put in my car. You can't just buy it built, okay? I've got parts from, like three different suppliers built in that dash, you know?
And I'm looking up a picture at that dash right now. I'm looking at the Season 2 version of it. Right. I believe that's the one you're using, right?
No, I'm using a pilot dash.
The pilot dash.
Which is a dash-on-dash design. Right. So, and also the monitor frames are more, they look like little TVs. And then the biggest telltale is a dash-on-dash design. Also, the switch pods are not molded into the dash. They're separate.
Yeah, so, this, just looking at the picture of this dash, it looks complicated. Like, because it looks like not only does it go into the dash, the steering column, but it also looks like it goes into your center console tray all the way to there.
Well, that is the lower console piece that it's got. It's the area that has all your buttons on the console, and also, you know, it, for real life function, it has your window buttons and that kind of thing, and your mirror controls if your car had electronic mirrors. And so the thing is, it looks like it supports the dash. It really doesn't. That, you know, they call it, well, it's got the dash support. Well, it doesn't even touch the dash. Okay, but it's made the way it's designed is really to make it like a 20 piece, right? But the thing is like you're absolutely right. What essentially that dash is you're building a movie set, a small movie set, because in the show that dash it was never actually working in the car. It was on a stage in a studio in the box when Kit's talking. It looks like this huge voice box. But when you actually have it in the car, it's a small voice box. People are always like, wow, that's small. Well, yeah, because the camera's always up on this mock-up of a dash in a studio. So
right.
It's a movie set. So if you look behind the car, you have to glue in all the supports yourself. You have to think about where you're putting those. I mean, they're essentially blocks of wood that are epoxied to the fiberglass in the back. And you have to position all that stuff so it looks nice. And also so that all your displays and stuff are shown and not cut off. Or you have to trim off, depending on who you had build your dash, you have to trim off metal pieces off of those overlays in the back that house all the LEDs. And you also have to make sure that there's no gaps and that it looks... I wanted my dash to look factory. Like, if GM were to come out and build a Kit dash, I want it to look like it came right out of a dealership, right? And I got some tweaks
to make. That was Michael Schaefer, or how do you say
Schaefer?
Schaefer.
Yeah.
He's the guy who made Kit.
Who also worked on the Back to the Future DeLorean, but
so my, you know, looking at how complicated these things are, because you know, I love props. You know, I listen to Props to History on podcast and TikTok, but like to have that mind to be able to come up with that, like what made him come up with that design? Like it's slick, it's smooth, and I like how it looks because I'm looking at the pictures. But and then same thing, you just brought up the DeLorean. That look that they got in the DeLorean, that's awesome. I don't know how he came up with it and goes, like, you know, drawing it up on paper is one thing, but then to be able to think of this is the material I need to make this piece, you know, like the dash, it's like how do you make a dash hold two TVs? I mean, those TVs got to be heavy too.
Yeah, those are the old black and white vacuum tube mini TV sets. You'd have to butcher an old mini black and white TV set to get those. And they've got the convex monitors. Like, they're actually going to jut out a little bit in those frames. Now, I personally could have gotten some of those, but I wanted to have a touchscreen for GPS and anything you want, right? Where you can hook up your phone or anything you want through an HDMI converter box to have movies, video games, whatever you want, but then also toggle it, because it's touchscreen, so you could toggle the modes of the screens to do whatever you want. You could toggle have GPS, and then you can have something on your backup camera on the other monitor, and forward or backward cameras. If you want to toggle forward view and back view, you can either map it to one. I've got relay boards that I purchased for the electronics, and I can map any button either on the switch pods or on the upper or lower console to do whatever I want, right?
And wasn't this a backup car too for him? Wasn't this like this? If I remember right, I think you told me the story. The Firebird wasn't their original choice of a car.
It was a Nissan 350Z.
So how did they come up? How did he pick? You know, because it's a backup car. So not only just picking the design of this thing, absolutely amazing, but to do it on a backup car that wasn't original, how did they switch over from the Nissan over to this Firebird? How did that happen?
Well, the Nissan was really, that was really the kind of their first choice, but then they heard there was a train accident with the Trans Ams, and so Glenn Larson saw a picture of before that happened. Glenn Larson, he was in a meeting, I'm paraphrasing, but there's a special about Knight Rider that's on YouTube. You can go watch it, and came out in the early 2000s. He's saying he saw the car. It had great lines. He's like, you know what? This is it. This is our car. Because Pontiac had just radically changed the design to be very, very aerodynamic from the Smoking the Bandit era Trans Am, which is it was a turbo Trans Am, but it was way different looking car, totally 70s look. And so GM, in order to get more aerodynamic and meet the fuel economy requirements because of the fuel shortage in the late 70s, the gas crisis, they said, we got to come up with an aerodynamic design, cut down a body drag and everything to make the car look more appealing for the modern age, and also make it more the drag coefficient be more efficient, you know, coefficient, be more sleek. They used a wind tunnel to form the body of the car, right? And that was something that was exclusive to the Firebird, the Firebird, because the Camaro, which came out the same year, was not aerodynamic at all. You see the thing, it's boxy looking. And for those of you who aren't familiar, think about the cartoon Mask, where it's the Thundercracker with Matt Tracker. He's got the red Camaro with the doors that open up. Well, that's pretty much basically a direct copy of a Camaro that they use. This. So there's a difference in what the cars look like. And so Glenn Larson was like, well, it's got great lines, and they were able to get, they had a train wreck, and they're able to get a bunch of these cars from GM with the promise that they would never, that they would destroy them when the show was over, because by law they could not issue these for people to buy and drive on the road since they're in an accident. Well, a lot of these cars were actually, for all intents and purposes, untouched. They were fine, but technically they're in an accident in transit and shipment, so by law they could not be driven on the road by customers. So they
how many agreed, do you think they destroyed in the filming just by launching them off ramps? And
to get the exact numbers, I know they had a hero car. They had a hero car, and then they had a number, maybe 7 or 8 cars, I think, for the first couple of years that they'd have to keep repairing, doing jumps. But if you notice, if you watch the show, and guys, like, check out the Knight Rider historians. Those guys know this stuff inside and out, like everything. So I'm nothing compared to the research and the expertise they have. But what they did was, if you watch the show, they would use some of these Trans Ams in the background, or in some of the, there's an episode called Big Iron, and it's in season 2. And it's in the episode, Kit gets buried under a landslide, but while you see the car sliding down this cliff, you'll know it's a real Trans Am. It's not a model car, and it's a stock Trans Am. It's all black, but the nose is totally stock with the vents and everything. So they would take a lot of these cars and they wouldn't even modify them. They're like, hey, we can use these for those destructive scenes instead of destroying our hero car or the cars they had to jump, right? Because they did heavy modifications to those cars. They put shields, welded shields underneath where the transmission is, so if they landed hard on the ground, they wouldn't totally destroy the transmission and rip the lines out. That's kind of some of the stuff they did, like a skid plate, right? And so, yeah, I mean, they didn't have a lot of the cars, but there are people that claim to have original screen used cars, and it's always been argued because like they destroyed all of them. There's no original screen used cars. But then you've got like the Knight Rider historians. They've got two screen used cars. Like Joe Huth, he's one of them. He's got a season four car, and he's got the markings underneath from the studio to prove that it is. And I think his car was actually the one that was at Universal Studios that was at the water. It was sitting over the water, and it was a car where the people visitors the park could go up there and actually go sit in the car, and the car would have pre-recorded stuff, or there'd be a guy with a microphone talking to you and stuff. But and then there's is it AJ Palmgren, I think was his name. They were both on Jay Leno's Garage. You guys can go back and watch that where they had Kit on there. And Joe Huth had his his car that was trucked over. They packed it up on a trailer and drove it to LA or wherever it was and drove that on the show. And so, and that car, they don't drive that as a daily driver. It's a museum piece, essentially. So, yeah, there's at least two screen used cars there. And if I'm going to believe anyone has actual screen used cars, it's going to be them. Anyone else, I don't believe it. I think they're blowing smoke unless they could. So.
Right, and it's and it's like, you know, and I'm sure, you know, they threw those things in storage lockers and stuff like that, and then over time they're like, oh, let's get rid of these storage lockers, and that's how some of
Yeah,
the
and if anything, because there is a picture of a wrecking ball going through and destroying the cars.
And just like any TV show too, that, you know, they put a lot of stuff in storage and then eventually they're like, there's no reason to keep this stuff in storage, and they get rid of it.
Yeah, they don't.
And they're,
They're
you
not
know,
fans.
just like just like the Star Wars props, you know, I think I said the last time we talked, you know, they threw that stuff in a storage, and then eventually they came to the thing going, they didn't think they were going to use that stuff again. They said, get rid of it all. And that was including that original Death Star piece that ended up as a trash can lid. And now is in the guy in, I think he's in Seattle, in
Yeah,
his.
that. Yep, exactly. Yeah, guys, and go ahead and watch. You got to purchase it. But there's a series called Plastic Crack, and it's on Amazon. Watch that. It's got a lot of really good stuff on there. It's one of my favorite YouTube guys. Yeah, I'm getting the 5-minute warning here. One of the guys on Plastic Crack I really like is Justice Curry. He seems like a cool dude. I love his shows, but check that out. But yeah, we're gonna get more into some of this stuff, and I'll keep updating you guys on the Knight Rider build. Obviously a huge fan. That car is essentially gonna be the mascot for this podcast. That's been the plan the whole time, and it's gonna be great. So, what I just real quick, I once again I'd like to plug the Knight Rider historians. They're great guys, super nice. They know their stuff. They recently had acquired, or at least revealed they acquired, the original GMC General, that which was the Flag Mobile headquarters. It was up in Idaho, and they acquired the truck, so they're going to be rebuilding that. But yeah, definitely check those guys out on YouTube. Also, there's a site called Kit Still Rocks, and I believe, and they're kind of intertwined in a way with Knight Rider historians. I've been using their site for high-res photos, for screenshots for my car, my build. And I bought seat fabric from them. It's original Perella cloth, or reproduction Perella cloth, like the original. It's great. So anyway, that's all I'm going to say on that. Kyle, do you have anything else tonight to wrap this up?
You know, I don't have too much. I do love enjoy talking about, especially the Firebird kit. I enjoy the Firebirds. It's been my favorite car for a long time. Talking about props, prop vehicles, I should say. You know, like I'd like to build the A team. I'd also like to get the helicopter frame for Airwolf, but unfortunately,
Oh, the Bell 222. Yeah, that'd be awesome.
right. You know, because I'm always fascinated by that stuff. But you know, I'd like to keep seeing your progress on the car, you know, as it comes along, because I've always liked that car, you know, and especially since I got some parts of my 84 sitting in there, now that I know the
Yep.
dust cluster's in there.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Makes me feel good that some of the gremlin treated car made it alive somewhere.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
But that's all. You know, we should hopefully have some good news stories from our correspondent. I believe he's wrestling some alligators right now. Down there. And then I heard something about a mouse kingdom or something that he has to go with. But yeah, hopefully we can hear some correspondent news from him on the next run.
Yeah, I will definitely be pinging him on that where he's been. And he's a vagabond. Where you been? But anyway, yeah, folks, that's what we got for you. And we, you know, stay safe out there and have a good rest of your weekend. And we'll talk to you guys later.